inspection by boldly and angrily defending his division commander from Pershing's criticisms. Pershing appreciated Marshall's honesty and forthrightness, and in July 1918 he transferred Marshall to the operations section at his Chaumont headquarters. Although he yearned for a combat command, Marshall brilliantly executed his new responsibilities. He planned and oversaw the preparations for the St. Mihiel and Argonne operations, which involved moving more than 500,000 men, 2,700 guns, and 900,000 tons of supplies over a few congested roads and railroads in the space of several weeks. After the war, Marshall gained valuable insight into the War Department's workings as Pershing's aide and troubleshooter during Pershing's tenure as Chief of Staff. Upon Pershing's retirement in 1924, Marshall went to China as executive officer for the 15th Regiment and then spent 5 years as assistant commandant of the infantry school at Fort Benning, Georgia. At Fort Benning, he instituted valuable reforms designed to encourage officer initiative, independence, and flexibility. He also had the opportunity there to meet and evaluate innumerable younger officers who later played important roles in World War II. Marshall's slow but steady rise through the Army's hierarchy, however, was interrupted after General Douglas MacArthur became Chief of Staff in 1930. MacArthur disliked the Pershing clique for slights, real and imagined, that he had suffered at its hands during and after World War I. He did nothing to secure Marshall's promotion to Brigadier General, but instead assigned him to a dead-end job as an instructor of the Illinois National Guard. Fortunately for Marshall and his career aspirations, his internal exile ended in 1936 after General Mallon Craig succeeded MacArthur as Chief of Staff. Craig admired Marshall and put his career back on track by getting him his first star and placing him in charge of a brigade. In the summer of 1938, Craig brought Marshall to Washington first as head of the War Plans Division and shortly thereafter as Deputy Chief of Staff. Chiefs of staff were like generals appointed by the president with the Senate's consent. They generally, though not always, served for 4 years. Marshall understood that his last opportunity to become chief of staff would occur when Craig's tenure ended in 1939. Despite his accomplishments and ability, his chances of succeeding Craig appeared slim. For one thing, he was still a very junior general in an organization that valued seniority. There were 21 major generals and 11 brigadier generals ahead of him on the Army Register. In addition, the War Department was racked by a feud between Secretary of War Henry Woodring and Assistant Secretary Lewis Johnson that politicized and complicated all issues involving the Army and made it difficult to evaluate people strictly on their merits. Finally, Marshall had alienated President Franklin Roosevelt during a White House meeting in late 1938 by flatly and bluntly condemning as impractical the president's plan to build thousands of airplanes. Roosevelt was so angry at Marshall that he refused to speak to him at a reception several days later. Despite these drawbacks, Marshall had a number of advantages that ultimately persuaded the president to nominate him for the job. He was not as junior in rank as it initially seemed. Recent Army tradition limited chiefs of staff to those officers who would be younger than the mandatory retirement age of 64 when their terms ended. By that criterion, there were only 4 eligible officers with more seniority than Marshall, all of whom were major generals: John DeWitt, Hugh Drum, Walter Krueger, and Frank Rowell. Marshall also had plenty of support for his candidacy. Woodring and Johnson, for instance, both backed him despite their hatred for each other, as did Craig. Marshall's most important booster, however, was Harry Hopkins, Roosevelt's closest advisor. Marshall had impressed Hopkins with his competence and bearing, and Marshall later speculated that it was Hopkins' endorsement that put him over the top. Marshall may have angered Roosevelt, but like Pershing a quarter of a century earlier, the president respected Marshall's willingness to speak up. Moreover, unlike Hugh Drum, Marshall did not actively campaign for the post, but instead conducted himself with a modesty and discretion that indicated that he would perform the chief of staff duties in a low-key, nonpartisan fashion. These factors convinced Roosevelt that